Good afternoon. So today I will talk about the very popular term Majorana fermions, which is very popular these days in the context of condensed matter physics. And then I am more excited about a recent experimental result in something called a Kondo insulator. I will tell them in some detail how my interpretation is that they are seeing a Majorana C. It's exciting because these days people are looking for single Majorana fermions here and there. And this unexpected corner in samarium hexaborate, you seem to have a sea of Majorana fermions. I hope you don't get drowned in it. Okay. So the Suchitra Sebastian at Cavendish Lab. She is one of the key authors in this experimental work. She was visiting Chennai, her family at Chennai, and then she spent half a day with me. When she told me about the new results about 2 months ago, then I started thinking about it and then got some idea 2 weeks back here. So that's what I'm going to talk today. So Mukul Lad, my colleague at Chennai, he was also there, when so we had lots of discussions. So this is what I'm going to say. So I will have some introduction. I'll talk about Majorana fermions and Majorana zero modes. And then towards explaining these experimental results, I will explain how an electron Fermi C, spinful Fermi C, that we are all familiar with, particularly when we have a particle hole symmetry, can be written in terms of four Majorana Fermi C. So as you all know, that Majorana particles are their own antiparticles. If you take a standard Fermi C made up of electrons, you have electron excitations, which are particles, and then you have hole excitations, which are their antiparticles. Like in a Dirac C, you have positron and electron. However, you can rewrite them in terms of scalar Majorana fermions, charge neutral Majorana fermions. And normally, this is not useful, this way of doing physics. But it turns out in this problem, it's very, very useful, which is was found by good friends Pierce Coleman, Miranda, and Zwelic nearly 22 years ago. So I will show that this nominally neutral Majorana fermions indeed exhibits Landau-Dyer magnetism and Diels-von-Alphen effect, and then discuss some related things. So this is the plan. So just an introduction to the condensed matter group at Chennai. We have colleagues, senior faculty Shankar, Hassan, and a very recent faculty Ganesh and Mukul Lad. And we have lots of students who have graduated. And it turns out I was just collecting papers. There are about 12 papers from a group focusing on Majorana fermions, mostly on this beautiful model called Kitaev spin model, which is a remarkable model, which is complicated enough, but at the same time, it's exactly solvable. You start with the spin problem and you get Majorana fermions in two steps. Okay, so the field is still not crowded. So the first paper explaining this phenomena came from Nigel Cooper and Johannes Knoll from Cambridge, and then came my paper. So I am giving reference to all the authors. So, okay, liquids. It turns out in physics, liquids are very difficult to understand. Lots of, we are a bag of liquid mixtures, you know. This is classical liquids and there's lots of stuff in it. Now when we come to, we have classical liquids like biological fluid, liquid crystals and so on, and then paramag. Then we have, by now, in the last one century, we have got several quantum liquids, Fermi liquids, to describe metal like copper or helium-3, cold atoms, Bose liquid helium-4, cold atoms, and then superconductors, paired superfluids, helium-3 neutron stars, cold atoms, and then Lettinger liquids, a lower dimensional non-Fermi liquid, and then 2+1 dimensional quantum Hall fluids. And we even have liquid of light now, because it turns out you can do this cavity quantum electrodynamics, make light photons effectively interact with each other, and you can realize what we call as a Hubbard model or other systems. So liquid of light itself becomes a very interesting subject, and lots of, and then quantum spin liquid, it's a big family. That is, when a classical paramagnet, if you think about just spins which are randomly oriented, if you make them quantum mechanical and then communicate, they lead to wonderful phases called quantum spin liquids, and we'll talk about Mehrana Fermi liquid. Okay. Okay. Now, this is the kind of, you know, summary of our places where Mehrana fermions appeared in condensed matter. In my understanding, one of the first beautiful work was by late Vic Emery and Steve Kivelson. They looked at two-channel quantum effect. Quantum effect is very simple. You have a metal like copper and put a magnetic impurity like a manganese. Then the conduction electron wants to form a singlet with the localized spin. So it ends up in a state called Kondo state. Now, if there are two Fermi surfaces which are identical, then electrons at the Fermi surface of both Fermi surfaces will try to form a singlet. So there is a fight or frustration. That leads to what is called a two-channel Kondo effect, a very beautiful phenomena. And they showed at the end of the day, it leaves there what is called a Mehrana zero mode. I will explain it. Then Kitaev explained it in the context of topological quantum computer, that if you take a p-wave superconducting wire, you will have zero modes at the end. And then vertices in p-wave superconductors, there were theories earlier. And then this material, which is believed to be a p-wave superconductor, supports half vertices, which have Mehrana modes. And in fact, it was experimentally discovered, these half vertices. Budakian is here in Waterloo in IQC. And then very recently from Princeton, they have taken a standard superconductor, SCO superconductor, that put a chain of magnetic atoms, and then the end of the chain support Mehrana zero modes. So there is lots of excitement because this can be used for topological quantum computation. They are non-abelian anions. Now, Mehrana Fermi C, we talked about in the context of RVB mean field theory, and then Sastry, Zwelik, and various friends have been talking about it in the context of quantum spin liquid. And then Kondo lattice context, it was 1993. Coleman, Miranda, and Zwelik talked about it. And then in honeycomb lattice. And what is interesting is this being able to write electrons or localized spins, like a spin half moment, in terms of this Mehrana fermion is a very useful thing. Already in the book of Dan Matisse and also Zwelik's book, this Mehrana fermion representation of spin half operators is there. Then people doing Kondo effect converted a 1D spinful Fermi C in terms of Mehrana fermions. This is part of the non-abelian bosonization that's also there. In higher dimension, it was done by these people, and then in Hubbard model by various people. Okay, so this is just in condensed matter physics, very often you have a site, you know, in a lattice, it has some Vanier function or some orbital, and you can have an electron or no electron. So that's a Fermi oscillator. So its creation operator or annihilation operator is denoted by psi and psi dagger. They have the standard anti-commutation relation. Now, you can write this operator in terms of some real and imaginary part. Then you can use this anti-commutation relation to find out what are the commutation relations of the real and imaginary part. They also anti-commute, but importantly, more importantly, the square of this real operator is equal to 1. Now, they are not separate entities, but let's think about them as separate entities that make a complex fermion. Then the nominal Hilbert space dimension is square root of 2. So square root of 2 times square root of 2 is 2. And it turns out, in condensed matter context, namely this two-channel Kondo problem, condensed matter physics traps one of these Mehrana fermions in the vicinity and sends the other partner to infinity. So in some sense, as Semenov says, you have a stretched quantum state in which the real part is here and imaginary part goes to infinity. It does happen. Because, in fact, as I will show later, you can make local specific heat measurements and get entropy, and you will get square root of two-dimensional Hilbert space. Okay. So this
is spin irrelevant to this discussion at this point?
Sorry?
Is spin not
it is going to be very relevant, yeah. Spin is going to be very relevant.
But I mean to the definition of the Majorana.
No, so I can take a Fermi oscillator, it could have additional quantum numbers. So for each quantum number, I do the same trick. But in the problem that we are going to consider, spins will play a very important role. Now I'm going to talk about a very simple model, which is exactly solvable, which was popularized in this context by Kitaev. I will go through the algebra. Sorry for a bad handwriting. Okay, so this is a very dear model. We all know Ising model. I am, normally you write SZ, so I'm rotating the coordinate system so that this is my Z axis becomes X axis. Then I apply a magnetic field in the transverse direction. So this is called a quantum Ising model or Ising model in a transverse field. This is exactly solvable. Now, if magnetic field is zero, there are two ground states, all spins up, all spins down. What this magnetic field term does is flips the spins and basically tries to tunnel between these two vacuums. So as a function of this magnetic field, very interesting things happen. And the tunneling succeeds at a critical point, and you go into a paramagnetic state and so on. It's a very well studied, exactly solvable problem. And this model illustrates what we are going to see. So in order to solve this problem, it's maybe it's too elementary. I will anyway go through it. If you think about this Pauli spin operator, a spin half operator is anti-commute on the same site. At different sites, they commute. So Wigner and Jordan Wigner, they discovered a trick in which you can make this all anti-commute by this transformation. That is, define this operator C as the spin flip operator times a string of operators made up of SLZ to the left all the way up to the beginning, namely site 1. Similarly, the C dagger. Now you can convince yourself that if you take the product, because of this string, when you pass them through, you will get a minus sign. And in a beautiful way, from anti-commuting, from Pauli spin operator, I have constructed fermions. And what is remarkable is that this, you can do inverse transformation. Then the Pauli spin operator, raising operator, looks like a fermion operator times a string of operator which can take plus or minus one value. So it is related to what is called flux tube attachment or string attachment. There are generalizations to higher dimension.
Are you considering a particular set of boundary conditions for the Wigner transformation to?
Exactly. So I'll come to that. Yeah. Right. In fact, I'm considering open boundary conditions.
Okay.
So what I do is I go back, and now the SX operator simply becomes this, and the SY operator becomes this. I substitute here, and at the end of the day, the string operators, strings cancel each other. I get a very simple bilinear Hamiltonian in terms of this fermion in 1 plus 1 dimension. So basically, it says that these objects get connected from site I and I plus 1, and there is a chemical potential term. If I rewrite it, it becomes a familiar term to us. This is what we get when you do superconductivity in one dimension. You have a standard hopping term, and if you have some attractive interaction among electrons, and if you do mean field theory, this is what you get. You say that spontaneously an pair of electrons can pop out or it can disappear. So an Ising model in a transverse field after the Jordan-Wigner trick becomes like a mean field superconducting Hamiltonian. So there's a beautiful connection between Ising model and this in one dimension. Now I'm going to do something. You notice that here the fermion operators come in very nice combination, which, for example, this combination, as we saw before, will give you the real part, the imaginary part. This will give the imaginary part, and that's what happens. So now I'm going to define at every site fermions in terms of Majorana fermion. Sorry for the change of notation, zeta, eta to this. But at the end, what I have is the entire Hamiltonian becomes very simple. It has, the way it's organized is like this is site 1. Then let's say take site 3. There are two scalar fermions which make up a complex fermion. So the top one I call as A and the bottom one I call as B. And the way the coupling has arisen in this problem is that B fermion couples with A fermion, B times A. So it, and then when I go to the next site, B is coupled to A, and so on. So essentially, if I forget about the magnetic field term, suppose I put it to zero, then it looks like decoupled Majorana fermions, that is B1 and A2 gets coupled, and B2 and A3. So I have schematically denoted the coupling by these bonds. Now you may ask, what happens to this fermion here and fermion here? And they are the zero modes. So the way that I organize operators, this Majorana operator and this Majorana operator drops out of the Hamiltonian. That means they have zero energy. Now I can re-diagonalize, that is, I can define a new fermion operator, combining this and this, combining this and this. Everything is formally correct. So I have found a very interesting result that a very trivial Ising model, even in the absence of a magnetic field, actually corresponds to, the ground state corresponds to, a Majorana mode sitting on one end and another Majorana mode sitting at another end. Now, okay, if I go to the next slide. Essentially, what I have got is the following. That is, I have some new fermion operators in between which are decoupled. And then I have a fermion operator with zero energy. This is made up of one Majorana real part on one end and imaginary part on another end. It's fairly straightforward to show this. Please, you know, if you enjoy working on this. So I'm repeating it. So physically, what is going on is the following. That is, if I look at the Ising model, original Ising model, I have two aqua. All spins up or all spin down. I can form linear combinations of them, like Schrodinger cat. But in this dual representation, in terms of Majorana fermion, they correspond to two boundary degree of freedom, which are scalar Majorana fermions. So it makes sense if I combine this and this, and then the Hilbert space of the entire system is integer, 2 to the power of some n. So this is a remarkable thing that happens. Now you may ask, what happens if I introduce a magnetic field? Believe me that when you do that, this localized Majorana mode starts spilling into the bulk, but it decays exponentially. So as long as I don't tune the magnetic field to large value and reach a critical point, I have a gapped system, and then the Majorana mode at the boundaries are exponentially decaying, so it's meaningful to talk about them. Yes? So what this magnetic field does is it connects the broken Majorana chains. For zero magnetic field, the Majorana chains were broken, and the application of magnetic field connects them. Even then, it's solvable. It's bilinear and fermionic variable. So you can do the mathematics, and then you can talk in terms of parity and so on. But what is interesting is that you can do the very simple mathematics and show that the Majorana modes decay exponentially as you move away from the thing. Now, if I have a finite chain, even this exponential decay will communicate, and there will be a small splitting. Yes? Yes.
You want to associate a square root of 2 to each Majorana?
Exactly.
Zero mode, and so you get a total of 2 ground states.
Exactly.
Down. But how does that actually work? You start with a vacuum and you apply a creation operator to. How does the square root of 2 actually come out?
No, square root of 2 is a way of saying it. But it turns out when you do thermodynamics, for example, I take this problem, the gap state, and then calculate local thermodynamic quantities, like specific heat, and get entropy, and you get a remarkable result that half log 2, which is equivalent to saying that it's square root of 2. Of course, if you do thermodynamics to the bulk, it adds up and you get log 2. Now, there is a claim that in the so-called two-channel Kondo systems, they have measured specific heat and see this kind of anomaly. This was first exactly shown in the context of two-channel Kondo problem through exact solution, where they found local entropy having this fractional value. So we are familiar with quantum number fractionalization. Here there is a Hilbert space fractionalization. There are even more esoteric things. When you go to the so-called Fibonacci anions and so on, it's more irrational than square root of 2.
So what happens when you act on the ground state? Does this A create this? I guess you call it A or B.
Exactly. So it mixes the two aqua. If I take one, it just mixes the two aqua. Yeah. Yes.
I'm a little confused about the phase diagram of your ISA model. So
okay.
For what values of the field or other parameters do you have?
Yeah, I did not show that. Let me show the phase diagram. So the phase diagram of this icing model in a transverse field, we scale it. So this is called a gapped phase. So for example, the gap collapses here. So this is ordered. And this is disordered. This is a critical point. So I am sitting here comfortably with zero magnetic field. So it's a classical problem. But if you want to write it as a quantum problem, it hides some two Majorana fermions at the end. And all these things are related to the ordered disordered transformations, well known in 1D problem. One can do it in that language also. OK, so this is a background for introduction to one of the Majorana fermions. Then Kitaev, in fact, said that you can take a 3D superconductor, spin polarize, and put a wire and make it a P-wave superconductor. You can get all these things. So there are excellent review articles on this. And then it turns out there is a material called strontium ruthenate, which is similar to lanthanum copper oxide, the first, the parent compound of the superconductor, high-TC superconductor. It's a Mott insulator. If you dope it, you get superconductor. In this case, an isostructural compound exhibits metallicity and very low TC superconductivity. It was predicted to be P-wave superconductor and experimentally confirmed. What is remarkable about P-wave, just a reminder that in the standard superconductor like mercury, electron spins are paired into a spin singlet. So the spin part is antisymmetric and the space part is symmetric. Now, when you have triplet ordering like in helium-3 or in this system, you have various possible triplet states, the three possible states, and then you can have generally coefficients. In general, a triplet ordered state is denoted by a vector d. We will not go into the details of that. But what is interesting is that just a side remark, if you take a superconductor, you can create quantized vertices. It traps half integer flux quanta, and there is a normal region at the center, and then superconductor outside. And this normal region, it's very interesting. It can support unusual excitation. So this is about the order parameter of this ruthenate is supposed to be like this. There are two spin copies, up, up, down, down. And then you create a vertex in one of them. So that's called half quantum vertex. And there are nice experimental signals for their validity. What was found was that the following. Before that, I will just mention, if you take a standard Fermi C and then look at what are the excitations, you can add an electron, that's a positive energy excitation. You can remove an electron, that also creates energy. So this electron-hole continuum. And what superconductivity does is it mixes these excitations coherently in this region, and you get so-called Bogoliubov quasi particles. So it is this coherence which makes charge indeterminate. That means you can think of it as a hole or as an electron. So there is a fluctuation in charge in units of two. But this happens in a coherent quantum mechanical fashion. That's why it's important. If you take such a superconductor and then create a vortex, then many strange things happen. The quasi-particles run around this normal core, and when they get reflected, an electron can become a hole with opposite momentum. This is called Andreev reflection. Basically, it says that the infinite condensate can give or take two electrons, and you can happen this. So this leads to remarkable bound states. Particularly in this case, suppose you take an S-wave superconductor and create a vortex. It was shown long back that you have so-called states trapped in the vortex core through Andreev reflection. And in P plus IP superconductor that we are interested in, it was shown long back that by symmetry, there is a mode which is trapped at the origin. So it's a zero mode. And if you look at the wave function, Or if you look at the operator, it's an exact combination of C dagger plus C. So it is as if a real part alone is here. So that means when I create vertices, I have to be create them in pairs. Then one vertex can trap the real part, and another vertex can trap the imaginary part. This was what was shown by various people. Particularly, Ivanov did a beautiful job and showed how these Majorana fermions, when you rotate them, they are non-abelian anions, they are rising anions. Basically, what you have done is you have taken a fermion and what you have done is the following. Basically, I have created two vertices, well separated in space. So the real part is trapped here and imaginary part is trapped here. So mathematically, it's as if there is a branch cut between them. So if you rotate one about the other, you will acquire phase factors. And if you fuse them, you will get some extra things. This was shown by Ivanov in some great detail, making these real and imaginary parts, zero modes, as icing anions, so which is important for topological quantum computation. So these are fairly straightforward consequences of Bogoliubov equations and vertices. There is another beautiful illustration of this in the so-called Kitaev model, which is a remarkable model. Just I will spend 2 minutes. Take this honeycomb lattice and put a spin half moment. So let me call the vertical bond as y bond and this as x and z bond. Then let me put in this bond the xx component alone. So it's like an icing model, but with x component. The y bond is like an icing model with y component. The other one is with z component. So piecewise, you know, they look icing-like, but the sum, they don't commute. The individual terms don't commute with each other. It's not a trivial model. And Kitaev used a remarkable trick and solved the problem. The trick that he used was, people used various Hilbert space enlargement trick earlier in the context of RBB theory. Here, what Kitaev did was the following. I want to represent a spin degree of freedom. So there is something like a magnitude and there is something like a direction. So he said, I will introduce four Majorana fermions, denoted by zero time component and the three, let's say, spatial component. Then they have this commutation relation and they have the whole Hilbert space dimension. Then of course, four Majorana fermions make the Hilbert space four dimensional, 2 times 2, or square root of 2 times 4. But then I have to project it to physical Hilbert space in which this kind of commutation relation is true. And then in particular, he showed that Pauli spin operator can be written in terms of product of this Majorana fermion operator. And then the physical state is projected by this operator D, which can take eigenvalue plus or minus 1 in the context of, you know, fermion slave boson approach. This will correspond to picking up single occupancy. That will correspond to plus 1. If you pick up the other one, it's minus 1. Okay. And Kitaev did this, and then the spectrum fell out immediately. And you have a remarkable result that if you go to the Brillouin zone, which is a hexagon in this model, you have Majorana fermions living at k and k prime point. They are Majorana fermions because if you take this fermion here, there is no hole-like excitation. Only one type of, that is, each Majorana fermion, its own antiparticle. It just falls out of the analysis. This is so-called one sector. There are other sectors where things become complicated. But the important point is, Kitaev solved this problem exactly, a non-trivial spin problem exactly. And it turns out it can be generalized to 3 dimension, and you can get similar physics. OK, so these are all the places where Majorana fermions keep coming up. Now let me come to So is there any question about Majorana fermion? Now I will go into materials. OK. So when you look at metal physics, we have simple metals like copper, aluminum. And then we have more complicated metals, like when you go to transition metals, like iron, cobalt, nickel, or you go to rare earth metals like gadolinium, europium. There, essentially, what happens is the conduction electrons are not only S electrons or P electrons. Sometimes there are holes in D band or in F band. So they are narrow bands. So electron-electron interaction becomes important. So the end result is magnetism very often. So that's a story about simple metals to some complex metal. Now, then when you come to compounds, there are remarkable sets of compounds. There are oxides which are metallic. There are oxides which are not insulating. And there is a family of compounds which are called heavy fermion compounds. Essentially, what happens is the following. That is, I said that there are two sets of, like if you think in terms of density of states, that is rho of E, energy as a function of, then there is some broad band, let's say with the Fermi level here. This is the energy axis. So this is a filled band. Then very often, some narrow band, which is extremely narrow compared to this broad band, falls here at the Fermi level. Now electrons would like to live in this narrow band. And when they live in this narrow band, they have severe restriction. Because the bands are narrow, they move very slowly. So charge fluctuations are not liked. That is, two electrons won't like to sit on the same side. There is a strong Coulomb repulsion. Here in a broad band, they meet and then run away. So they can delocalize and form block states here. So there is a problem in which these electrons would like to get into this narrow band, but then they have to get into it carefully. To avoid energy cost, they should wait for an electron being absent. So this is a basic physics. This leads to remarkable physics called valence fluctuation, Kondo insulator, heavy fermion. One of the dramatic thing is, when this happens, at the end of the day, states close to the Fermi level are like quasi-particles that you have in copper. But except that, sometimes their effective mass due to many-body interaction in the physics I described becomes very heavy, like 500 times the bare electron mass. So somehow, the Fermi liquid description, which you learned from Sommerfeld and others, wants to survive in spite of these strong interactions. That's what happens here. So it is in this context what is called Kondo effect comes, because in Kondo effect, you have a localized spin, then you have a conduction electron C. So when the electron comes close by, there is an effective exchange coupling between them. Typically, it's antiferromagnetic. So the conduction electron or electrons close to the Fermi surface wants to form a singlet. But there is no unique way of forming the singlet. There are many, many coherent superpositions possible. So the end result is this conduction electron acts like a very strong scatterer. And if you look at resistivity of gold containing a small density of magnetic impurities like manganese, the resistance diverges because there is a strong singular scattering from here. And then eventually it's saturated. That's called Kondo minimum and Kondo phenomena. But behind that phenomena is a very non-trivial many-body effect. It's not a one-body problem. And lots of physics of confinement and everything is there in this particular problem. But we'll not go into the details. So this is called Kondo effect. A non-trivial problem which was solved over decades. At the end of 1970, we got good understanding through renormalization group and some exact solutions and so on, but the answered solution. Now, a Kondo insulator is a material in which there is a Kondo spin at every side. Let me show this. Let me take this example of samarium hexaborate and illustrate. Samarium hexaborate is a very simple cubic compound. It forms a simple cubic lattice of samarium atom. And then inside there is this boron octahedron, and they communicate, they bond with the next octahedron. So you have a very beautiful cubic lattice. And then if you look at the quantum chemistry, this B6 octahedra has two electrons short of a filled shell. So it grabs two electrons from samarium and is very happy. So you have like an ionic situation in which this is charge 2 minus and this is 2 plus. Now if you look at samarium 2 plus, after removing two electrons, what you have is you have nearly degenerate situation in which there are 6 electrons in the F shell. As you remember, F shells are very sharply localized. Unlike D, they're even more localized. Then, so this is a nominal state, or you can donate an electron to this D orbital. They are nearly degenerate. So in general, the valence can quantum fluctuate between these two configurations. I am hiding many, many details, including spin orbit coupling, how a Cramer's doublet emerges and so on. But at the end, what happens is, if the electron is in 5D shell, they have a very strong overlap among themselves between two neighboring samarium atoms, and it forms a broad band. Whereas the electron, the odd electron, is sitting in the 4F shell, they're very narrow, they don't communicate. So they form essentially infinitely narrow band. So you have a situation in which this conduction electron forms its own Fermi C and also occasionally wants to jump into a 4F shell and have some exchange interaction. So this is determined, an appropriate model for this is called Anderson lattice, which basically says, sorry, I should have heard some transparencies. What it says is that you have some operators describing the kinetic energy of the conduction electron, and then there are electrons, let me call it as F. It says, if you leave an electron, let's say in the samarium atom in the 5D shell, or the other way, or an electron from F shell can jump into this empty d orbital. So this is a very standard, this problem is easy to solve. In fact, what it means is the following. That is, suppose I have a band which is dispersing, then I have an infinitely narrow band coming from this, because this F has no kinetic energy. Its chemical potential is here. Then because of this so-called hybridization, what will happen is the bands will split. You have this situation. It's very simple. But the problem arises, which says that whenever two electrons sit on the same F orbital, there is a big Coulomb cost. So this is the heart of the problem. So this becomes a many-body problem, kind of so far not solvable. So this is what leads to heavy fermion physics and quanta insulator. And in this quanta insulator, the number of electrons in this F level is the same as number of electrons in the broadband. So it's a kind of commensurate situation. And if you think of an extreme limit, if you have a very strong coupling between the Kondo spin and the conduction electron, they can form a tight local singlet. So then it will be an insulator. But that's a bad limit. We are interested in some other limit. So the problem is very clearly stated. Now, how do you solve this problem? This is a many-body theory. Now, in Anderson lattice, you are talking about hopping of an electron between one and another. And typically, this parameter V is much less than U. So it was observed by Schrieffer and Wolf that this being a small parameter, this being a large parameter, you can do a perturbation theory and reduce it to a simpler Hamiltonian called Kondo lattice. And that Hamiltonian is very simple, looks like this. It says conduction electron density at site I interacts with Kondo spin at site K. So this is called Kondo lattice Hamiltonian. So what I have done is I have suppressed manifestly the charge fluctuation and taken that into account through an effective exchange coupling. So this problem is also not solvable. It's called a Kondo lattice Hamiltonian. And if you want to write S in terms of conduction electron, it is, you can write like this. You recognize, for example, if S plus will be Ci up, Ci down. So just a way of rewriting the physical spin of the conduction electron in terms of this. So this is what we want to solve. Now, when you come to samarium hexaborate, the F levels have very strong spin orbit coupling. So spin is not a good quantum number. So often J is a good quantum number, and there are crystal field effects and so on. But people who have done modeling, this has been going on for ages, have come to the conclusion that there is a Cramer's doublet in F level, which has this symmetry, and there is another Cramer's doublet in 5D level. They communicate. So you can call this as two states of a pseudo spin. This is another two states of a pseudo. These are all the Cramer's doublet, another Cramer's doublet. So essentially, this S is replaced by some Cramer spin. And of course, it's very clear from the charge distribution, there is no SU2 symmetry here, because in the standard problem, in this absence of spin orbit coupling, there is a rotational symmetry, but here it's broken because the states are different. But however, we will argue it has been argued by in the literature that once you look at paramagnetic state, you can assume some kind of approximate issue to symmetry and go ahead and get the physics done. So what was observed in this system recently, that was the excitement, is this paper, which appeared in Science magazine about 10 days ago. So they did what is called a quantum oscillation experiment. This is a very well-known experiment in metal physics. It is remarkably a very simple experiment. That is what you do, you take a piece of copper, for example, and then apply magnetic field, and then there will be Landau diamagnetism, and there will be magnetic moment produced. So there will be basically a torque felt by the sample coming from the interaction between the magnetic moment and the magnetic field. So you measure that torque. So this is called de Haussmann-Alphen effect. And such a remarkable simple experiment can map the K-space Fermi surface for you. So sometimes they measure this using resistivity measurement, then it's called Shubnikov de Haussmann-Alphen effect. But then it's a very simple, the physics is very simple. Why do I get oscillation? You all know, let me take the simple example of electrons in two dimensions. Suppose I have electrons confined in sheet, then the electron density of states is one particle density, it's a constant. And once I apply a magnetic field, then you all know that the states get organized into Landau level, separated by h cross omega c, equispaced. So now if I take two-dimensional metal in which the electron density is fixed, then if I sweep the magnetic field, if suppose my Fermi level is somewhere here, this will pass through. So any thermodynamic quantity, like in just simple internal energy, will have an oscillatory behavior as a function of the magnetic field. And this is what is sensed by this experiment. It could be in magnetoresistance oscillation, or it could be in torque oscillation. And what is remarkable is that in real system, in fact, this is a long history. People like Ansager and Lifshitz and others have contributed. Suppose I have a Brillouin zone like this, then I have a Fermi surface which has a neck and a belly. Then when I apply magnetic, for example, in this direction, we think in terms of Fermi classical picture, cyclotron motion in real space. You can convert it into motion in momentum space of wave packets moving on the surface of this neck. So this kind of extremal surfaces can be located by this experiment by orienting the magnetic field. And also you can measure the area of the surface just from the frequency. So apply Sommerfeld quantization condition. So by tilting the direction of the magnetic field and measuring the oscillations, you can map the entire Fermi surface and compare it with the first principle calculations. This is a big field. And traditionally, so far, it has been observed only in metals, and that too in good metals. And the surprise was that when Suchitra came to Chennai, she told me that they see it in an insulator. It's an insulator because if you look at resistivity, it essentially seems to diverge and it's saturated some value. You don't expect quasi-particles at the Fermi level, you have a gap. There are also neutron scattering evidences saying there are no low energy spin excitations also. So the system is a gapped insulator. But however, you see beautiful oscillation. Then, for example, you fit it to Landau picture, you find out 20 Landau levels at small magnetic field. So it's a very clear, yes.
Do they actually see Shubnikov to pass oscillations in the resistivity?
Resistivity is so high, they don't see it. They don't. That's an interesting point, yeah. So what Tony says is that I can map Fermi surface by thermodynamic measurement like this. I can also measure resistance, which will oscillate. They don't see any oscillation. The magnetoresistance behavior is that of a simple insulator. Okay? Yeah. So this is a remarkable result. And then there are also details that the resistivity saturate flattens. This is an old puzzle, actually. Why it flattens? Recently, there have been some explanations. I don't believe that. Correspondingly, the amplitude of quantum oscillation also saturates. If you follow the standard Fermi liquid theory, it should saturate like this. Now it diverges. So there's an enormous increase. So this is an experimental observation. So no system known to us, no metals, exhibit this kind of anomaly or deviation in Lipschitz-Kosevich behavior, including quantum oscillations in cuprates. There is one place where it seems to happen, which is in so-called composite Fermi-C in quantum Hall effect. So two things. First is quantum oscillation is unexpected. Secondly, a very strong deviation from Lipschitz-Kosevich. So this is an experimental puzzle, which I try to answer. And now, just for a comparison, there is a sister compound. You take replace samarium by lanthanum. Lanthanum gives away two electrons, and then it basically has one electron in the 5D shell. There is no F shell. F shell is completely filled. So what you find is you have basically samarium hexafluoride without F moment. So it's a standard metal with a Fermi surface like this. And you look at the quantum oscillation frequency, they look like mirror images. They look alike. So quantum oscillation experiments here, see Fermi surfaces which fill half the Brillouin zone. And the mean free paths are of the order of few microns. So that's again a puzzle. It's a clean sample. Whatever you can infer from the old theory is that quasi-particles, whatever they are contributing, they are traveling for long distance. They cannot be thermal excitations because the gap is big. OK. So it is in this background I will. How much time do I have? About 10 minutes. OK. I will.
Question.
Yes.
So do you have specific heat data?
Specific heat data, yeah.
You have it.
It's linear. That was one of the old puzzles. Yeah, thanks, Bill. If you have low energy excitations, they should show up, for example, if there's a Fermi surface, they should show up linear specific heats. So it's not inconsistent with this. But the question is, these objects do not carry charge. These objects do not carry spin. So what are they? So that's a puzzle. So it is here. OK. It turns out, you know, in fact, this is somewhat related to what Majorana did. Majorana's idea was to get spin half particles, which are neutral, charge neutral. They are their own antiparticles. So what he did was, apparently, he took Dirac equation, went into some other representation, which gave you two copies of neutral particles and then corresponding another copy. Then you identify them, and then you get what is called a Majorana fermion. So something like that happens in, for a simple case of, you know, half-filled band with particle hole symmetry. Yeah. Now, in a standard Fermi-C, particles live outside the Fermi-C, hole live inside the Fermi-C. Now, as I said, the Majorana zero modes are different. They are at zero energy. Okay. Now let me do the following. So I take a very simple tight binding model of real physical electrons hopping on a lattice, and I do a sublattice transformation on the creation operator just for convenience. In fact, it could be done in shift in momentum space, but I will not go into the details to this. Now what I do is the following. I take upspin electron and call the real part of that electron, which is a Majorana scalar, a Cx, imaginary part a Cy, and the real part a Cz, and the imaginary part a C0, and the anticommute. But you notice this combination, if I rewrite, for example, Ci naught is equal to Ci so it looks like a Bogoliubov quasi particle. It's a linear combination of electron and hole with equal strength, sign changes. So are the other three Majorana fermions. Now, I can substitute back in the Hamiltonian. And then you get a very neat form. So what is this form? This says, originally, I had a real electron hopping on the lattice and forming its own band. So there were up electron and down spin electron. Now I have four Majorana fermions. I have written it in a suggestive form as if there is a vector, this three of them. X, Y, Z forms a vector, and there is a scalar. I have conveniently separated it. And so now, the way that I have displayed it, it looks like Majorana fermions, scalars, are hopping on the lattice. And of course, they are not the eigen excitations. I have diagonalized the problem. And then once you diagonalize the problem, something very simple happens. So what I have is, I have regular complex fermions, but living in half the Brillouin zone. One fermion corresponding to the scalar part and one corresponding to the vector part, and plus some ground state energy. Yes?
Vector on the spin rotation.
Exactly. Vector on the spin. So I should go back again and then just this important point. So since I have only half the degree of freedom at every site, when I solve this problem, my degrees of freedom should not fill the entire Brillouin zone. And that's what happens. In fact, the Majorana fermions, once I diagonalize it, like a neutrino, for example, if I were to describe neutrinos in this language, suppose I have a Fermi C, then observable neutrinos will live outside the Fermi C. It doesn't have its antiparticle, so everything is there only outside the Fermi C. In fact, for more about neutrinos in terms of Majorana fermion, you should ask Zheng Cheng. He has beautiful ideas. So another way of saying is that in this tight binding problem, thinking in terms of Majorana fermion, every site has a zero mode. Four zero mode Majorana fermions, because the chemical potential is zero. But except that the zero modes are not localized. Since they hop, they form broadbands. And because they are essentially half the particle, each one of them fill only half the Brillouin zone. This is a very important point. Okay, now, next. Now let's come to Kondo problem. Again, something beautiful. Now this is, in fact, this was done in by Coleman, Miranda, and Selig in a very complicated way, thinking of odd frequency pairing. I will not go into the detail. So what they did was the following. So far I have given Majorana fermion representation, which is exact for the electrons. It's just a rewriting. But there is a representation for the local moment also, which is in terms of three Majorana fermion. I take three Majorana fermion at every site called eta, eta x, eta y, and eta z. And then take the scalar product. Some friend looking at it immediately said, won't it be zero? It's not zero because they are anti-commuting. So ni cross ni is equal to nx, ny, and so on. Now something remarkable happens. The Hilbert space of this spin operator is square root of 2 times 3 because there are 3 Majorana fermions. So there is a redundancy. And it turns out, so OK, you can substitute this and then finally get the Kondo-Hamiltonian. This is an exact representation, except that there is a gauge redundancy because I have introduced this. It's not an approximation because it multiplies the Hilbert space that many times. So I have extra gauge copies of the Hilbert space. It's a very beautiful physics here. This is what happens in the case of Kitaev model. So by going to this Majorana fermion representation, I have enlarged the Hilbert space simply as gauge copy. So if I formally solve this problem exactly, like using computer, I will get identical spectrum as a real problem. But then I will get many, many copies, degenerate states, which don't communicate. Further, when I look at the local electron spin in terms of this three vector and one scalar, it has a very interesting decomposition. It looks as if there is a longitudinal part and transverse part, C cross C and it. So I will come to the physics of this soon. And also I use this identity. Now, once you see this, you are tempted to do a mean field theory. Because you have four fermion terms, or quartic term. You have a quartic term. The natural thing to do is some kind of Hartree-Fock theory. You can do it, for example. Then if you are looking for some kind of paramagnetic state, the average value of C vector will be 0. Average value of eta cross eta vector will be 0. Whereas if you factorize this, you won't get 0. So which is what I do. In fact, this is I'm doing this in a much simpler and physical way than what Piers Coleman and company did. They were motivated by odd triplet pairing. Here I'm doing a very simple thing. And you do this factorization. Please repeat the question.
Yes. Yeah. For bigger S, you only decompose into eta cross eta, but for the small S, you have the.
Exactly. That's a very important point. So big S is a localized spin. There is one electron up or down. Whereas this S is obtained from conduction electron, where at a given site I can have an up spin, down spin, W occupied, and empty site. So in fact, your question will be answered in the next slide, that this has a very interesting physical meaning. So this is what I do a very simple Hartree Fock. Then once I do this Hartree Fock factorization, the problem is exactly solvable because I have bilinear. And then what it says is my vector Majorana fermion of the conduction electron hybridizes with vector Majorana fermion of the localized spin. So I can diagonalize it formally. And since C naught drops out of this interaction term, the charge neutral scalar Majorana fermion remains decoupled in this approximation. So what I have is half the Brillouin one zone of this charge neutral scalar fermions. And then I have, because I have now combined the C and eta fermion, now I have states filling the entire Brillouin zone, full Brillouin zone. And more importantly, the spectrum now has a gap. So this is what I would have got if I had a simple hybridization in the Anderson model. So what this has done is, this procedure captures the fact that electron spin alone would like to get coupled with local moment spin. So there is a natural way of separating the spin degree of freedom and charge degree of freedom of the electron through these representations. And finally, I find a remarkable result that spin sector is gapped and the charge sectors, charge neutral, but it's made up of plus and minus charge, remains untouched. So this is the result. Now the most important thing is, okay, this is fine, and this is so one can argue about this mean field theory, do stability analysis, and so on. But what happens in the presence of magnetic field? This is where the confusion comes. Now, as I said, Landau diamagnetism, let me do it for free electrons in the Majorana representation. Everybody will agree with me that I take an electron in a tight binding model and then replace the magnetic field through pile substitution and then formally solve the problem. It's a half-starter problem if it is a square lattice. It's more complicated in higher dimension, but I can diagonalize the problem in terms of some Landau levels corresponding to this lattice problem. And then this is my kinetic energy Hamiltonian, and my ground state will correspond to half the negative energy states filled and positive energy state empty. Now what I do is, I do the same trick after diagonalizing the problem. That is, I find a state below the Fermi level and find its partner. So there are four states, two charged up-down spin and two up-down spins, four of them. I combine them as Majorana fermions, and then I get this result. So this is a free Fermi gas. I have not done anything. I've just solved the problem in this new, or having solved the problem, I put it in the new representation. Now it looks as if I look at the energy dependence of the magnetic field, it looks as if each Majorana fermion contributes 1/4 of magnetic field dependence to this energy. So now if I do a de Hausmann effect experiment, what I do is I basically look at the energy derivative, magnetic field derivative of energy, which is the magnetic moment. Or if you look at susceptibility, it's the second derivative. So it's a very counterintuitive result, because if you try to convert these physical electrons to Majorana fermion in that state, and then do pile substitution, Majorana fermions get scrambled and there is no easy way to diagonalize it. Apparently, this is the problem that Piers Coleman had. When the experimental result was announced and when the experimentalist talked to Piers, he said that his whole theory will not work because Majorana fermions do not couple to magnetic field. But the fact is, it's not true. The physical electrons couple to magnetic field, so I'll have to suitably remodify my Majorana fermion. And then parametrically, there is a dependence of the ground state energy on magnetic field. Okay. So this is the thing. So I have shown that the counterintuitive result that Landau diamagnetism is exhibited by individual Majorana fermions. Now, physically, it's due to the fact that a Majorana fermion is a linear combination of a particle and a hole. So if I think about it as a quantum object, it doesn't have a sharp charge. The average charge is zero, but it is quantum fluctuating, like Bogoliubov quasi-particle. So depending on the time scales and various things, it can behave like some charged particle. In particular, the electron and hole can go in the opposite direction, and then finally you can lead to magnetization and so on. I will not go into the details. Yes?
The correlation is explicit one symmetry or not.
Okay, so there is no breaking up symmetry. I'm just rewriting it as a neutral object. So my U1 symmetry will appear in a very complicated fashion in this new representation. It's not manifest. So the U1 symmetry is manifest here. Here it's implicit. I'll have to work hard to get it. So at the level of free fermion, rewriting it, I have not broken any U1 symmetry. This is something interesting. Because if you give me a Fermi C, internally I have electrons and hole excitations. Then what I'm doing is I'm coherently combining them. It turns out for quantum physics, this is important. Whereas if I do standard resistivity, that's a very bad representation. And if you do STM tunneling, that's a bad representation. So for some purposes, when spins of the conduction electron is selectively attacked by some other object, this seems to be a good representation. Then I continue the story, do a mean field theory in the presence of magnetic field, and get identical result. So that's basically the end of my story. Let me see what. Okay. So this is a zeroth. There are several issues here. What I have done is like a spherical curve approximation. But I'm quite excited that there is a breaking up of Fermi C. One fourth of the Fermi C survives and continues to show quantum oscillation. Because even though it's nominally neutral, it has coherent charge fluctuation. So there was a question raised by Jacquie and others in one of their papers. Who will discover Majorana fermions first, condensed matter physicists or Pauli? I believe condensed matter colleagues have discovered Majorana zero modes in the Princeton experiment, in the Delft experiments, and so on. But I think the Cambridge group has discovered a sea of Majorana fermions, like a neutrino. If neutrino is there, OK, it's big. OK, let me conclude. So I believe this is a first attempt. Say, it's just topological insulator. In fact, this is a very important contribution, again, from P.S. Coleman and others, saying that if you look carefully at the band structure, there is a band inversion, which will lead to the surface metallic state. And there has been experimental verification of that, and it's very exciting. So I have not touched the topological insulator aspect. It's very easy to add to it by putting spin orbit coupling. I will not go into the detail. So there is definitely a need for a more realistic model, but like a BCS Hamiltonian, model Hamiltonian shows something as a matter of principle, exhibits off-diagonal long range order and superconductivity and so on, and gap and coherence factors. And so it's something along that line. Then if you go a little further, if you look at the recent experiments, quantum oscillations experiment as well as STM experiments, photo emission experiment, there are many anomalies. For example, in quantum oscillation, people want to look at surface bands. And they have done torque measurement. They see it. And they, as Tony was asking, have they done Shubnikov-Dyhasman-Alphanek? Yes, they have done for the surface metallic band. They don't see any oscillation. So my suspicion is what they are seeing is actually a Majorana band. And then there are charge neutral, if you look at it in general, there is charge neutral scalar possible, charge neutral vector, and also combined charge electron Fermi surface. So it needs to relook at RPS result, quantum oscillations, and so on. Now, once you have Majorana fermions at your disposal, in a sense, if I come down in energy and look at Fermi surface excitation, they are all zero modes. They are all the Majorana fermions that we look for. But unfortunately, they live in K-space, and they are spread over the Fermi surface. Now, it's conceivable that if there is a gap produced in this Majorana Fermi C, and if there are topological crystal defects, like edge of a end of a, some dislocation tip, and so on, or in some condensate, you may be able to trap zero mode. So this needs to be worked out. And to me, which excited me was that this resistivity saturation at low temperature, people in the last 4 years have been explaining it using this topological insulator and metallic surface as an artifact of that. I always thought it's something bulk, and I can explain it qualitatively and see that the two are connected. In other words, the resistance diverges, and at low temperature saturates, as if there is a unitary limit. In quantum effect, it's well known that if you do perturbation theory to calculate resistivity, duty, and impurity, you see a log divergence. But when you do the problem exactly, there is something called unitarity limit, it reaches a saturation value. I believe the same thing is happening here when you have a collection of contour spins. But it's more interesting because if you think in terms of these quasi-particles, the quasi-particles at very low energies as you go to low temperature, they have long timescale coherent oscillation between the two charged states. They are in some sense entangled and then it's oscillating between the two. So that can explain this resistivity saturation and also this. I will not go into detail. And there are many, many issues about going back to odd frequency pairing and nature of symmetry. I did not talk about what do I do when I do the mean field decoupling. Manifestly, I break a Z2 cross Z2 local gauge symmetry into Z2. And also, thinking about in terms of this Majorana-Fermi C, I break a SO4 symmetry into SU2 symmetry. Now, there are many, many interesting issues. Quantum insulator is one corner of this field. Typically, you don't have one conduction electron per contour spin. You have less or more. So it leads to what is called a heavy fermion. There are lots of interesting superconducting phases, magnetic phases. And we have been puzzling about heavy fermions. So it's likely that some of these heavy fermions are indeed Majorana fermions. And then there is a very famous Doniak phase diagram, which looks at physics as a function of J, and we have basically a Fermi liquid and antiferromagnetically ordered, and all this suggests that maybe there is some region in between where there is more esoteric physics. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Tony.
Maybe you said this and I missed it, but what area or areas of the Fermi surface would the periodicity in the Sebastian experiments correspond to?
Let's see. Yeah. So, if I remember correct, they see these necks and then this extremal surface. And whatever they see, the alpha, beta, they all correspond to the extremal surfaces in this very symmetric Fermi surface. I don't know the more details, but I have the paper again.
Okay, what do you expect in your model?
Yeah.
The periodicity in whatever age to have any relation to the sort of standard results? It would be quite different.
It'll be identical to that because, as I said, we solved the problem in electron representation and converted it into Majorana representation. I have magnet. Okay, let me show that. Yeah, that's important. Okay, so this is an important point. So, in the presence of magnetic field, I solve the problem, and then I get ground state vacuum energy. This, if I interpret it in terms of this, this energy dependence is identical to what you have in free electron gas, but except that I have written the excitations in terms of Majorana fermion. So each Fermi C contributes to 1/4 of this quantity. So the magnetic field dependence is identical to the free Fermi gas. And in the presence of interaction, what happens is this gets gapped. So falls out of the problem at the chemical potential. So this alone remains. So I expect the same periodicity.
So related to the Damchen's question, so you said global U1 is not broken.
Okay, this is a very tricky question in the presence of interaction. In the absence of interaction, it's not broken. Because even though my excitations look like linear combinations of particles.
So eta is singlet on the global U1.
Yes.
And then one of the UR subgroup of SO4.
Let me see. Then eta. So the. Okay, please go ahead. Yeah.
Eta is which comes from spin. And then U1 subgroup, so 4 is the global U1, right? U1, we have a C0 to C3.
So let me talk about this so far. Yeah, this is a very important point which I forgot to mention. If I take a site of conduction electron, I can have this possible local state. Zero occupancy, W occupied, empty site. So this is like a neutral state, and this is charge. Normally, we worry about this. It's a physical spin. And it turns out, for this particular symmetric model, you can also organize the operators so that this acts like an upspin and downspin, some pseudo spin. So this Hamiltonian has an SU2 spin symmetry times an SU2 pseudo spins corresponding to this particular hole combination. Now, in this, when you do this mean field theory, this is broken. That's broken, exactly. One of the subgroup, yeah.
So does that mean U1 is actually broken?
Because if you think in terms of, yeah, this point was debated when Pierce Coleman and company solved the problem using this odd frequency pairing. So there, they first accepted that U1 symmetry is broken. But I don't think so. There is something subtle going on. I don't have a good answer. So the answer to your question is yes, even symmetry in the mean field theory is broken. But I think it needs to be done carefully.
There could be a spoke.
Sorry?
Your mean field state could be a spoke.
Could be a?
Superconductor.
Exactly. So the original motivation was it's an odd frequency paired superconductor, but with very peculiar response to magnetic field. See, because if you look carefully through various things, the pairing involves two electrons, physical electrons, and a localized spin. So somehow it makes it less of a superconductor. So this point I have no clear feeling. But my feeling is, even after this decoupling, exactly in the same way free Fermi gas had this form, 1/4 of it is remaining. U1 symmetry is not globally broken. But I have no proof for it. It's an insulator. It's a good insulator. So as I, you know, that's a remarkable thing. They have given it the value of resistivity. In terms of resistance, it's several kilo ohm. So it changes by a few orders of magnitude. It's a good insulator for all practical purposes. So now, because it's a coherent combination of electron and hole, it will respond to angle resolved photo emission as well as STM, but in a particular way, which needs to be worked out.
So you have a prediction for a future experiment that would validate or invalidate your theory?
Invalidate the theory.
What?
You are saying which will invalidate the theory? Or
validate it. Have it
a smoking gun.
Yeah.
I do not know. Okay. My. So I believe what they see on the surface is a Majorana-Fermi scene. Because even without bringing in the topological insulator aspect, I can form, if I have a bulk Majorana metal, it can have surface bands. It happens in things like silver, there are beautiful surface bands. So I believe what they are seeing is Majorana-Fermi C. But I have no, so if that is proved experimentally, that will be a smoking gun about the bulk.
But these boundary states on the Majorana basis, they would be charge form.
So ideally.
They have transport on the boundary, right? You can do measurements.
Correct. So now there are four possibilities. I can have charge neutral scalar and vector Majorana Fermi surface, and also recombined electron Fermi surface. So what they are seeing, it's not clear to me, because they do make a very important statement that the effective mass of one of the bands is too light. It's 10 times lighter than what you expect based on simple theory. And also the fact that you don't see Shubnikov Dehaus manifold for them is also a mystery. So things need to be, so probably the hidden Majorana Fermi sieve will be easily revealed through some analysis of the surface states, but I don't have an analysis yet. And specific heat, linear specific heat is in fact apparently was an old puzzle that can be explained. According to this simple model, the specific heat coefficient of the very low temperature region and above the hybridization gap will have a ratio of 4, because only 1/4 of the Fermi surface contributes at low temperature. But experimentally, you see a big difference. That could be due to deviation from the simple model, heavy fermion characters and so on.
Do they have also a spin susceptibility measurements?
I have not seen any spin susceptibility measurement. No, there are earlier measurements of spin susceptibility. I don't remember, I should have put it. Yeah, there are some very early experiments. See, this system is very old, 1969. The first paper is from Ted Jabal and company. And in fact, in the next paper, they saw the resistivity saturation and wondered about it. It has been in the field for a long time.
So what do you predict for the susceptibility?
No, I have no prediction at the moment. I have not calculated it. It should be, it will be exponentially gap, because this scalar charge neutral Majorana fermion is a scalar. Even though it is made up of up and down spin electron, that's like a reference state. So the rest three forms a spin. This is an important point we can discuss later. So it should have exponentially small susceptibility because of the spin gap. The hybridization gap is a spin gap. In fact, I should also point out, in this model, the excitations are spin one physical fermions, which have no antiparticle of its own. And there are neutron scattering results available. It should be reanalyzed from this point of view.
So when you talk about Majorana Fermi, you mean actually the system there is like an enhanced global symmetry. Kind of enhances U1,
you mean on the patches of Fermi surface?
I mean for the whole system, because if you use this Majorana notation, you enforce this particle core symmetry.
Okay.
So just like the old core symmetry for Hubble model and Hubble.
Mm-hmm.
So you mean because in principle you can also use a complex fermion to do the same thing. So if you use complex fermion modeling, it's kind of some special. Special Hamiltonian for the complex fermion, which imposes some enhancement.
Yeah, in fact, I tried to go back to complex fermions, avoiding Majorana fermion representation, and do this mean field theory and so on. I'm not able to do it because there is something naturally about the eta Majorana fermion, the local spin Majorana fermion, and the conduction, which there is a natural coupling. If I write it in terms of electron operators, it's a mess. So that's why I think it's a very useful representation for this problem. So very briefly, you have four Majorana fermions. Three of them spinful, other is spinless. So this gets gapped by the Kondo spin. Very crude. It's so simple.
Spinner-form surface with can have a similar response.
Singular response. Sorry?
Singular response. If there's an insulator, you can have quantum insulation.
Yes.
For spin response.
Sorry, the spinful Majorana fermion, sir?
Spin
on. Oh, yeah, good, good. Very good. Yeah, in fact, in my paper, I mentioned about three possibilities. One is a spin on Fermi surface, like in Mott insulator. But then here, there is an experimental result saying that there is a spin gap. So many of the Kondo insulators have a finite spin gap, the famous one being iron's silicide. So there is a finite spin gap. So there is a gap. So the spin on Fermi surface explanation is out. What did I had? Spin on Fermi surface is not.
So how is charging gap and spin gap, are they compatible in this?
Oh, yeah. So in the mean field theory, you can have
in this experiments, are they compatible?
Spin gap and charge gap are comparable. Spin gap is about half of the charge gap. Yeah. This is also a signature of Kondo insulator or correlated insulators, there is a low energy spin excitation.